Hey, welcome back to the Get Balanced Podcast with me, your host, Dr. Donnie. And today, my very special guest is Chief Scott Stanton of the Umatilla County Fire District 1. That's a long name, but I think I got it all in there. Did I get it correct, Chief?
You bet. You bet. Good morning.
All right. And also the past president of the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association, correct? One of the most, sure. I should say, most recent past president, I think.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. All right. Well, welcome to the podcast. I appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. I'm honored.
Yeah. So just for our listeners, I got to meet Chief Stanton, well, a couple times, but then I actually went out to his department and did a workshop that the chief shows his leadership by sitting in for that workshop for the whole 4 hours, and which was awesome to see that from a leadership perspective. But also got to know, you know, a little bit about the department, and we talked a little bit, but if you would, Chief, talk a little bit about your career, because you're just not in the county fire department. You had a career doing a few other things too, right?
Yeah, I guess so. Well, my career started in 1986 in the south part of this county, which is in Northeast Oregon, where I became a volunteer at a little town called Pilot Rock at the fire district there. Became an EMT-1 back in those days. And eventually I got hired in what was Hermiston Fire in 1995 as a paramedic firefighter, went back to school, had an ag degree. And, you know, my family's family ranch, it just wasn't big enough for grandparents, parents, and me. So I had to go look for something else. And as my dad would tell you, or anybody, excuse me, it was a good choice on my part. Probably with a pension out there and different stuff, it probably was a pretty good choice. And I've had a pretty amazing career. With that, you know, we host one of the regional hazmat teams, one of 13 in the state of Oregon, covers 6.5 counties. I worked my way up through the ranks. I became chief in 2014. I consolidated the Hermiston and Stanfield fire districts into one district, which is now District 1, here in Umatilla County in 2016. You know, I got a chance to go through the chairs, the Oregon Fire Chiefs Association. I sit on the Special Districts Association Board of Directors. But probably one of the most incredible things I got to do was through a cooperative agreement with the U.S. Forest Service, I got to be in the wildland arena in the fourth of Forest Service and served on an incident management team for 19 years and worked my way up to where I was a Type 2 IC trainee. I'm qualified as a Type 2 Ops Chief and Safety Officer. Went through the rank, the ops sections through there, you know, as task force leader division up. And that gave me such a viewpoint of the incident command system and people. You know, I was on the space shuttle recovery in Texas. I was on Hurricane Katrina for a couple tours down there in Louisiana and Alabama. And so it just to Alaska on fires to everywhere. So it just gave me, I've had such a great career. And so I just was a sponge. And, I think if there was one thing, it was, you know, like we talked about was, man, where's my work-life balance? Because I'm sure at times I was way too far on the career side. And maybe that's when my, you know, my kids didn't always get the full attention and stuff they needed. But my career should took off. And so really, you know, talking with you, that's what it's all about is about work-life balance. And I don't know that anybody's perfect at it, but at my age now, as still the fire chief, I'm still trying to work at it, you know. Mm-hmm. And I hope I do a better job, but that's kind of my little history is, you know, I've done a lot and I got the opportunity to do a lot and I'm grateful for it. And, yeah, so here we are.
All right. Now on that, you mentioned you got busy and the work-life balance was off and things like that. Do you look back and, well, let me just, you're a straight up guy. I'm a straight up. I just like to ask questions, right? Straight up. Would you do anything differently?
You know, it'd be hard for me to say I would do anything different. I don't know because, you know, it was such an amazing career. And, you know, I think everything worked pretty good with the work life. But, yeah, I mean, there's always little pieces I think I would change. But overall, the big stuff, I don't know if I would, you know.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, you know, in June, my wife and our two daughters we had, you know, when they were younger, we always tried to take a nice vacation as soon as they got out of school because they knew by July – I was going to be busy with work here at the district and on my fire team stuff, which would take me across the West at times and usually just here in the Northwest mainly. But, you know, they knew that, but there's also extra money that afford us to take nice vacations and have nice vehicles and, kids to have cars and cell phones and all that
Oh,
stuff. It
yeah.
seems like they have nowadays. So, I know there's some small stuff I wish I could have, I regret I could change, but a lot of the stuff, I don't know if I would or not, because
Yeah.
it afford my family and I to have some stuff that ordinarily wouldn't. It obviously helped my retirement pension at some, so it, but there's always going to be something I wish I could change sometimes.
Retirement pension. Well, you're not retiring yet, are you?
Yeah, I'm on a work back now. I retired almost 3.5 years ago,
Okay.
and the legislature back in like 2020 created a thing on a work back, and so I retired, and I'm on a work back. So I'm drawing my pension and working back, and unfortunately, a lot of that was probably due because after a long, long time, my wife decided she didn't want to be married and wanted a divorce. So, we end up in a divorce, and so that financial ability to do that really saved me in a lot of ways to be able to kind of keep my life moving forward financially. And it's never nothing I ever wanted, of course, with that, but life moves on and moves forward. And so I took that option to retire instead of working longer, and that's kind of where we're sitting. So
Oh yeah. And let me shift with you a little bit, because I would like the listeners I want to talk about leadership with you.
okay.
Okay. So leadership, describe your leadership style.
Well,
And I mean, maybe from where it started to where it is today, did it change any that, things like that?
I think I'll start with people who you looked up to as, say, a mentor, whether you wanted, or someone who would help you out, or some leaders that you didn't want to be like. So I think all the leaders in my life, I've always able to take a little bit, good or bad, from whoever was in a leadership role in my life. My dad was my first leader, right? And
Yeah.
he's a veteran, and he ran the farm ranch, and so I learned my work ethic from my dad and how to just be humble and try to treat people right. And so he's the first one, obviously. And I didn't have a really necessary an athletic hero. My dad was my hero. And so then when I get in the fire service, you have chiefs and lieutenants and captains and all these people that influence you as you come up through the ranks. And I had people in the Forest Service that were instant commanders and ops chiefs that I was able to glean nuggets from as well. So I tried to take all the good stuff and understand the bad stuff I didn't like or didn't think would work, add that to my education and my college degrees that I have and all that stuff to try to figure out how can I be a good leader myself now. And I think the first thing I would say is I'm not done trying to be a good leader or a great leader. I still read lots of books. I still listen to some podcasts. I attend conferences. I attend whatever I can. I'm still trying to be that sponge because I think I want to continue to be better. And I've always said to my folks here and anybody listen that the worst, I think, behavior in a fire service is that person that says they think they've arrived. That's horrible. That's dangerous. And so I want all my people to always continue to learn and thrive. And so for me, I look at it a lot about a servant leadership. I look at myself as the bottom, that inverted triangle. I think my job is to hold everybody else up. And that's by going out, getting the money so we can run the department, to add people, to, remodel stations, to buy new equipment, to mentor others. I see myself as trying to hold everybody up so they can go do the real job out on the streets,
Yeah.
So, and I try to be a good listener, and I know I'm not the best. So that's one of the things I've always been working on, to be a better listener. I kind of got that at home once in a while from my wife too. So I know that's a problem. So I want to be a good listener and, just try to be human with people. And I kind of have a saying that says it only takes a minute to be kind. And so that's just, I try just to be a servant leadership. And when you have to make the tough decisions, you still got to hold people accountable and make those decisions and just try to be forward looking. And I'm always trying to do that. I have a 4-year budget always running ahead of our current one to figure out, where are we at? What are some pitfalls? What are some, things that are some opportunities? And just trying to be proactive that way. And I do that by reading and so that's kind of it. And I don't know if that answered the question quickly or concisely, but that's kind of the way I guess I see it. Trying just to be forward-looking and yet be humble and kind and treat people as I'd want to be treated.
Oh yeah. No, I love it. I love it. I love the servant leadership and all of that. And thinking of being proactive and forward-looking, you hosted my workshop. That was volunteer on your part, right? And talk a little bit about your interest in leadership when it comes to the health and wellness, well-being of your department members. I mean,
So for me, that started years ago. I can remember when I was interviewing for the job of chief here in 2014, and they had three big the and it was consisted of, I think, a couple of the board members and another fire chief and another board member from a di other district. And they asked me, what are your three big priorities if you become chief? And I remember my number one, I said, I want to take care of our people because it's a tough job. And we run the ambulance service as well here. So you're running, fires, which include structures and wildlands and vehicles, all the kinds of fires. We're doing hazmat, we're doing running the ambulance service, we're doing rescues out of, cutting people out of cars on the pin-ins. We're, has to, get people with some rope rescue stuff. And so it's a complex job in the first place. And to me, since then, in the last decade and after the pandemic, it's only completely got so much more complex. And we're adding new generations into the fire service. So the complexities of the job have even gotten, I think, more complex. And so right away, a decade when I took this job, my highest priority was the people. So obviously, how do we do that? And it goes from different, the big thing was cancer prevention. You tackle that. And then nutrition and physical fitness, and now then PTSD comes along and anxieties, and how do we handle the stuff we see? And it's not just the stuff we see. I always said the worst thing it wasn't what I saw, it was what I had to smell as a paramedic, right? So it's more than just what you see, it's what you smell, it's what you have to do, decisions you have to make that are really tough at times, even as just that EMT or firefighter, paramedic work. So we're always looking for ways to try to help our folks. And when they right now, anybody that comes through the door, whether they're a part-timer or full-timer or whatever single role, after I do a couple hours of orientation, the next class is we have kind of an in-house counselor through a contract, and he gives a class on rebuilding resiliency. That's the next thing they hear.
Nice.
We bring in a financial planner to help them, to because money's always the biggest issue. I know years ago I've heard pastors and a lot of people say the biggest problem you'll ever have in marriage will be money. But we want to help our people not just to thrive while they're working, but I want them to have a good retirement too, right? And be able to, have money and do things with, because unfortunately that is what happens with the world. And so we bring in the financial folks, and we bring in nutritionalists from the hospital to help us with that. And we have everybody gets a membership to the Club 24-Hour Fitness, and we work out on duty, and we have the contract with Community Counseling Solutions, so that brings in our counselors and psychiatrists and stuff like that when they need that help. And so we're just, and then we bring in people like you to help us with work-life balances and stuff like that. And so, and I always attend everything. I've attended the Struggle Well class, and I can't even list all the classes I've taken because I want to be able to take them too to evaluate them. But it's just a kind of a holistic view of how do we take care of our people, because they're gonna, and we're running more and more calls. We're short-staffed. And just now you've got the fentanyl issues with overdoses. You've got the homelessness is a problem here now. And it's just our men and women, they're in the fire services, not just here, but all over the country. They're just having to do stuff that I don't think anybody thought we'd ever have to do, and especially long term. You think about the veterans and they go to, World War II and they spent 2 years in Europe, or they're Vietnam for a tour or two, or Afghanistan, and we're not seeing that type of traumas and death too, but our folks in the fire service and EMS world, they're seeing that stuff over a 20, 25, 30-year career, death and destruction and stuff. And so how do we do that? How do we get on the front end of this in a preventative type piece to help them be resilient, help them to, how do we do that? And one of the big things we're doing now is standing up a really good peer support team. We have a good chaplaincy. We have four chaplains here between us and the Hermiston Police Department. And so Yeah, it's just about doing everything we can to take care of our people so that they can do their job at the top of their game, both physically, emotionally, and mentally. So.
Yeah. Yes. No, that is wonderful, Chief. And you're from the servant leadership to I'll make up a new term here, progressive leader, as in, because you are embracing the preventive, proactive approach when it comes to the mental health as well as the physical health, right? We know exercise is good for the body.
Oh,
Okay.
yeah.
We know that. But now we're starting to learn a lot more from the mental health, behavioral health side of all the proactive things that we can be doing out there. And you are leading the way on this. How do you see it though from let's go outside of the Umatilla footprint, from the state of Oregon to the national perspective? How are you seeing our other, do you find a lot of other leaders are similar to you, or do you feel like there's still a lot of learning that needs to take place? Any thoughts on that?
I know there are leaders out there and probably some that are far better than me already at this and already further down the road. And I know there's some that aren't, that still need to be catch up, So definitely we've got to do more education and awareness out there. And everybody's trying something because I think I know I can speak to the state of Oregon pretty well. Everybody's trying to find some of those solutions. A lot of them cost money and a lot of places are fairly hindered to spend money on stuff. I've been blessed where we do spend some money on some stuff where we can afford a, basically an in-house counselor, to counsel our folks and not just our folks. He's able to counsel spouses and significant others too. It's
Yeah.
just not the employee. It's how about their spouse? Oh, and, yeah, I think it's a problem across the nation. And I know there are some folks out there. I got friends that are chiefs and in a lot of other states, And I think you can, I think you, it's probably across the whole board of people that are doing more than me, people that are doing less than me, doing the same. We're all kind of up against the same thing. And in the end, we're all in the same ballpark trying to figure out how to win the game.
Yeah.
And so the more awareness and education we can share, and let's pluck out something that's winning over here and working, will it work here and try it? So, we have a robust community paramedic program here, and her name's Jessica. She just does an amazing job. And I think, we know that people can heal and are more comfortable when they're at home and more home health care. It's kind of like reverting back to the doctor, coming to your house with a doctor bag, kind of.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a future part of what we do, but we got to figure out, how do we reduce the hours of our folks that are doing emergency services when you don't have the money to hire a whole bunch more people? And how do you call shed some of the stuff that doesn't necessarily need a 911 ambulance that could be used by a community paramedic or a social worker or home health care worker? So I think there's still a lot of work to be done, and I think the answers are probably somewhere in this country right now. It's just how do we gather that information together to roll it out so everybody has access to those solutions?
Yes, because you're right. The call volume, I hear it all the time. It's just completely different than what it used to be.
Everybody's calls are up, and I don't know anybody's really overstaffed. I've never heard one chief ever say, "Oh, I'm overstaffed. I just need to cut some people. We got too many people around standing around the station." So that's
Right.
not it, right? So we got to find ways to get more people to spread the call volumes out per person would help, and call shed stuff. Sleep deprivation is huge. That's the big thing we're trying to work with right now. Our dispatch system here in the county needs to be brought up to kind of some new standards where they are today. Because right now we're waking a lot of people up that don't need to be woke up at night.
Yeah.
And that's our biggest next hurdle we're trying to really accomplish here in the county, actually, not just in my department, but the whole county. And so the Pendleton Fire Chief Tony Perotti and I were both working on that. We sat on a meeting this week with some county commissioners, and we're trying to figure that out. How do we take that next step with dispatch to help shed calls when we need it, get the proper resource to the proper call at the proper time. How do we get it to where unit level dispatching and a lot of places are already doing this, so we're behind the eight ball there, no doubt. But that's our big hurdle. And how do we decrease that sleep deprivation to where we're only getting the appropriate people up when they need to get up, So yeah. So
Now, how do you you guys are on 24s, correct?
yeah, we work a four shift or a four battalion here, so they work basically 24/72s.
Okay, because and most would you say most? I mean, well, I've been up to your area. Those that are not, maybe listeners that aren't familiar with your area, I imagine a majority of yours live in or near Umatilla.
Yeah, we have a few that live, 100 miles away. We have no living restriction for our shift employees, but most live right here in the district, very close. Yes.
Yeah, that's and because I hear from some of the metro areas, if you will, a little bit that where it's really expensive to live, that they're living 3 hours away or something, right? And so they're at the station underneath the chief's leadership for maybe 9 days a month, and I'm getting questions like, how do we help them? How do we take care of them the other two-thirds of the month, right? And I think that's another challenge that is universal across the country right now.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back in history, the fire service used to work 24 on, 24 off, back like in the 1800s. That was just kind of the way they did it. And we went to finally three shifts, and now we got a place working for it. I think we have to get those hours down. The normal, well, Americans are bad at times. We work a lot of hours, but if it's a 40-hour work week, how do we get the fire service down to that 40-hour work week, and stuff like that, but still have 24-hour coverage and some of that stuff. And but it takes people and money and some forethought. And so that's what we're just had a, we're just had a kind of a planning meeting today for talking about shifts and how do we do it? Or do we add, what do we do to make it better? Less hours per risk. Cause if you have less hours at work, that's less exposure to those risks and those exposures to those bad things. Right. So, yeah, it's, and, so I think we have to look at those, as a fire service as a whole, how do we reduce the hours of work week of our responders? How do we shed the calls? A lot of responders, we're sending a lot of paramedics to calls that are just basic life support type calls that are, or a lift assist. I'm using a three-person ALS engine to do a lift assist. I
Sure.
just, so we got to figure out some stuff and it's going to cost money, but it's also we need to engage our legislators and our commissioners and city, management and, to figure out how do we do this? Because the system can't continue down this road. It's going to break. And so we're already seeing it individually with some of our folks that are breaking. What happens when we start breaking the systems, So, and we have some people that are starting to look into it. We have a great legislator in Oregon, Representative Evans, and he's all on board of how do we fix stuff, for the fire service. And so there are people out there across the country that are legislators that are helping too. So, but we got to keep that mantra of, okay, how do we fix this? How do we make it better and safer? And how do we take care of our people?
And with talking about taking care of people and maybe some less hours, is your does your department are you generally running overtime like most others?
Yeah, I mean, I think at least in Oregon and probably other places, we call it mandatory overtime. And that wasn't even a thing 5 years ago for us. And yeah, we probably are mandatorying someone once or twice a week, maybe, because of vacations and sick leaves and family leaves and injuries or whatever it is, So yeah, and that's now you're putting them into a 48-hour shift, which I think is just even worse on our bodies, right? For sleep deprivation and fatigue. And so yeah, we got to find some solutions, and we can't just say, well, we'll find it next decade. We got to work on this and make it some, put some urgency to it that we got to start working on this. And it's going to take some like state level help and with that too, I believe.
Now, inside, the other thing that I hear often is that when there is the overtime, that if it's more on this a little bit more on the voluntary side, as in okay, who's going to pick up the shifts, it's generally the same people always picking up the shifts. And what I hear is that it's the younger firefighters that are not raising their hand and stepping forward. With that said, but when we're talking about from a chief's perspective, I know you look at your department from a holistic total members, right? Of everyone, you're looking at the health. How do you try to help spread that? Let's everybody participate. Is that Any
Yeah, and I talk a little bit about that when everybody comes through the door, and I have them that first couple hours in my orientation. And I'm talking about the history of the department here in our area, and my expectations as the fire chief for them. And we talk about helping each out. When we have those big incidents where we need to have those off-duty folks come back in, yeah, on overtime to help us, because when we have that 16,000 acre wildland fire, we have that huge potato manufacturing plant potato chip that explodes and injures six people, and it's a 500,000 square foot fully involved commercial building. We got to have help, right? Not just from them, our mutual aid partners too. But so we they hear it, but yeah, I think the younger generations, they value their time off, and I hope they're better money managers, because maybe that's what it is. I can remember when I started for like $2,000 a month or $2,100 a month, it was like, man, I was jumping on whatever overtime I could get, So, but they do value their time off. And some of the older folks seem to understand that commitment, and they want to come in or whatever. But yeah, you kind of got to meet them at their needs too. If and so we try to instill that it's not just a job here, it's a career, it's a lifestyle to be in the fire family and to serve others, to serve our community members. And but still, I talk to them about work-life balance then too. So I can't ever say anything bad about a person that has great work-life balance, because they come and work and do a great job here, and then they go home and do their stuff with their families, and that's great. So it's such a double-edged sword in times.
It is, it is. And there's been times when I remind the younger ones that it work-life balance, let's not forget work is in the equation there, right? For the health and wellness of the department, I think we, try to share the load is pretty much a message that I try to bring, is always try to share the load,
I'll add that into my orientation. I'm gonna give you credit for sharing the load. I'm gonna do
There
that. That's a good one.
you go. Yes. Well, let's talk about advice. Any advice you could give to the younger leaders, this or the aspiring leaders, ones that think that, okay, I want to grow into that, I want to lead. I know education and training and all of that, but any other type of advice that you or wisdom that you could share with the group out there?
When I try to mentor my younger officers or my folks on my exec team, I talk about, obviously I'll start with the educational piece. And education can mean that next college degree. It can mean that next NFPA, Fire Officer 3-4 cert or Instructor 3 cert. But as far as that, I also believe education can mean listening to podcasts, reading magazines, reading books. I'm a big fan of books, or even books on tape. Great. There's so many great leaders outside the fire service, leaders of military or Fortune 500 companies or what. So, in here we actually have, starting with our probationary folks and working up through officers, there's some books, required book reading lists, and they have to write maybe like a book report on it. And the first one is by Rick Lasky. Pride and Ownership, obviously, is one our probationary firefighters have to read. There's some other ones. But for young leaders, I tell them to, think about where they want to go with education. And then the training part, you can say the training could include the podcast, the periodicals you want to read, the, just, I think just try to, but then at the same time, take care of your home life too. And I think I was mentioning to you one time, I went to Hawaii with my family, and I had my cell phone, but I only checked it in the morning and at night. And if I could answer a little quick email or something, I would, but I didn't take it with me the rest of the time. So if any pictures were taken, it was by my kids or my wife or whatever, because I didn't take my phone because I knew what would happen. Unfortunately, I'm that guy, oh, let me answer this real quick. And so I just made a point to leave it in the hotel or the condo, and so we had a great vacation, and it really helped me to do that. So finding those organizational pieces that can help you to leave work at work at times, especially when you're with your family on a special time like a vacation, I think that's the critical part. It's one thing at home if you got to answer a quick email or a phone call, especially when you're the chief or a deputy chief. But well, I tell you, when you're on vacation, that would be one piece is, be real strict about when you're going to check your phone.
I love that story when you told me that, Chief. And if you would go back a little bit in the story and talk about how you set that up, though, so that putting your phone down was not harming the
Yeah,
department at all,
so,
right?
and some of the folks at the station, they knew my wife's phone number too, some of them. So, but I, also with good leader, one of the biggest part as a fire chief is to create good leaders with you, like my two deputies, my division chiefs, having, I want them to make sure they're good. And I think I've done a pretty good job where my deputies can, they can kind of, between the two of them, they'll run the district, without me. So they knew when they had to call me or leave a message. If someone got hurt or killed, obviously, if there was major property damage to one of our vehicles or in a record, they knew those few things of when I needed to know. And if it was major bad, somebody knew how to get a hold of my wife when we were in Hawaii, right? For that, in
Yeah.
that time frame. So
Yeah.
they had parameters on when to, hey, this is when we got to talk to you, chief. So that's a big part of it too, is having good staff, and I want the next person, if I'm grooming, say, one or two or whoever, and people in my exec team to take my job, I want them to come in here and do a much better job than I can do. So that's always one of my goals, is to create better leaders than I am. And again, being organized and setting those parameters, so when you do go on, say, vacation with your family, you can be present with your family and your kids and whatever that may be. So, and that's big. And I'm not always perfect at it, but I try to do that. And
Yeah.
like I said, that's always, it's going to be a goal of mine to do that always, but
I think that is absolutely a best practice. It truly is to be able to put the phone down. And I've worked not so much with chiefs on putting the phone down, but with the union officers of, put that phone down to have dinner. Just, let people know that you're going to put the phone down for an hour to have dinner with your family. And that you will return their text and stuff after that. And it works. They're like, oh my gosh, you're right. All I had to do is communicate it. And it works. Yeah. Well, what's in store for your what's next for you? What's down the road look like?
Well, there'll be a time where I will step away from the job. It looks like I may extend my contract a couple years. We'll see. Again, we have a lot of projects going here. We passed a bond, so we're renovating stations, and we bought a bunch of equipment. The next step is, staffing. So how do we attack that? So, I think over the next 2 to 3 years, while I'm still here, before I, 3 years, I'll be 60 and I'm probably ready to bail out of here about that time, I hope. And when I turn it over, I want to turn it over to where the new chief, logistically, the stations and the equipment are in great shape. We've got more staffing. So that's, and we've got maybe a levy in place to handle that, because that's what's going to happen under our tax limitation laws in Oregon. We have to do what they call a local option levy to augment our permanent tax rate. So, I wanted to make it so the new chief can come in, and he's probably going to have, in that new chief's tenure, he's going to have a whole bunch of new problems he's going to have to deal with, probably different things, right? So if I
Yeah.
could have the staffing and logistics part kind of taken care of, then I would feel real good about that chief stepping in and taking off and taking the position to new levels, and taking the next step and taking care of our employees and stuff.
No, that's very, very nice. And then, will you head back to the ranch, or what will you do?
That's my dream. The ranch here in South County of Umatilla, it's been in my family since the late 1800s. I would love to build a new house and shop up there and retire up there. But so we'll see if that's all in the cards.
All right, all
I
right.
tell people that they say, "Well, you're gonna get back into some cows then too?" And I'm like, "Oh no, I don't want to take care of cows at 60 years old." And so, but I also am realistic about the cost of doing a lot of that stuff. I want to be able to travel too. So, so we'll just see how it goes. And but I'll, and in the end, yeah, I'd love to live back up on the ranch for sure.
Yeah. Well, a lot of my listeners, they're gonna say, Donnie, you didn't really ask him much about his daughters at all. He mentioned he has two daughters. So tell us a little bit about your daughters.
Oldest is Erica. She's married, two grandkids. And I'll tell you, those grandkids are, they're a boy and a girl, 5 and 7. And they are just the light of my life. I tell you, they are just so awesome. And the youngest is Lindsay, and she's in a committed relationship with a young man and working. And so I'm just proud as punch as both of them. They're incredible young women. And yeah, and they're involved. And like I said, I try to spend at least once a week. I try to see my grandkids, and usually it's Papa bringing pizza. So they're always wondering, like, all right, Mom, it's Wednesday night. Where's Papa and the pizza? So, and
Yes.
sometimes I got to switch over, to a Tuesday night if it's a, board, my board meeting's on a Wednesday night. So, but yeah, so that's the piece of it there is kids are awesome and grandkids are even more incredible. And just watching them grow and watching them come to the ranch and maybe, doing some deer hunting and elk hunting and enjoying the outdoors on a four wheeler or whatever. So, yeah, that's kind of my future, I think, is grandkids and just getting out of the fire service and maybe not be done with doing something, but if I do something, I want to make it in the realm where I'm still helping somebody do something, whether
Yeah.
that's consulting or volunteering to help out wherever. Just I still want to make an impact with to make people lives better, communities better. I'm a Rotarian, so helping out in those areas, just want to be able to stay busy. And I may not be done working when I'm 60 and maybe done with the fire service, but I'll be somewhere doing something, hopefully making a difference still.
Oh, yeah. And then, as we wind this down, one thing I usually like to ask too is that, in the fire service, you mentioned the chaplains and things like that. What is spirituality, has that been a part of your life, from growing up to as fire chief?
Yeah. And it's funny. Yeah. Well, it is. Yes. And, cause like where I grew up, Wednesday nights, every, basketball practice, football, it all had to get over quick. So we had Wednesday night Bible study, So, and that was a part of it. And, Easter service and, but I gotta be honest, my family was not a big, every Sunday did they go to, church. We, with cattle and wheat and all that stuff. And that was kind of the one day we had to hunt or go water skiing. And so, going to church every Sunday was not part of the rhythm growing up. It was Easter service and Christmas service, and of course I went to Wednesday night Bibles, that kind of stuff. And then as you get older, you get a chance to go to some church on Sundays, and so that was a part of my older life, is being involved in a church and at times. And then we had a thing here where some of our leaders here in Hermiston, we met every Tuesday morning early and had a kind of a fellowship. Was nice as leaders in the community, whether it was me and the school district superintendent and different people, there and getting into the book. And I think that's part of it. If it's for you, that's great. If it's not, then that's okay too. But we have great chaplains, and they're not here to try to, claim a person and bring them into, a church. They're here to be good listeners and counselors. They're trained that way. And if our employees want to talk that side of the spirituality part, they're there to do that. And they do when they, if they want to, they do. And, so it's a great thing. And all our, like I say, at all our ceremonies we have or where we have, we have a Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and we have an invocation, So, and I still like that part about doing that stuff here. So, and but yeah, so that's kind of the part. Yeah, I once had a pastor tell me years ago, and he was such a great guy. He said, and I was, we were talking about, where me not being in church every Sunday and how I felt bad about it and this and that. And he goes, "Well, Scott," he said, "I'd rather have you outside thinking about God than sitting here in a pew thinking about wanting to be outside." And that kind of made sense. And I think he just said it to try to take a little burden off my mind. Totally, I think that's a big part of being a Christian. Having that hope in your life, I think, is huge. It is for me at least. So.
No, very, very nice. Well, as we wind this down, Chief, is there anything that I did not ask you that you wished I would have, or?
I was a little nervous when I was telling you when we agreed to do this.
I
So, I just tell people too, if don't quit when you get frustrated, but also don't be so, ask for help when you need it. We have an open door policy here where, the newest youngest person come right into my office and say, "Chief, you got a minute?" And we'll talk about whatever, And I think that's important. We all got to be good listeners. And we all got to, if we could just take that piece to where, if we think about it, just takes a minute to be kind and respectful and man, and
Yeah.
pull together as a team. And I think it could still be just an amazing career for people. But we got to make sure we're always being kind to each other and taking care of each other and taking care of our constituents. And
Oh
yeah.
yeah. Yeah. You know what? I'm gonna definitely so my son, he's been a firefighter for 3 years, and I'm excited for him to hear your words of wisdom on
Oh,
this
well,
podcast.
I sometimes wonder how much wisdom's in him,
No, it's there, believe me.
but yeah, I just, I know we're doing something here in the state of Oregon and Washington. I'm working with our executive director, Jeff Griffin of the Oregon State Firefighters Association, and with the or Oregon State Fire Chiefs and the Washington Fire Chiefs. It's kind of a 12 module thing called a professional development for chiefs or people that want to be the fire chief. And we're going to roll that out. And that's going to have a big facet. Part of it's going to be mental health, behavior health, and all that stuff. It's not just about strategy and tactics and human resource management and all that finances. It's going to be, hopefully, you can take these things and really help you be better at your job too. So I'm fully involved with that as a chair of that committee for Oregon Fire Chiefs still. And so, yeah, we'll just keep hopefully making it better for everybody that's coming up the line, because we definitely got to find those folks that are, somebody's going to take these chief jobs. So we got to make them where they're still a good job too to have.
Oh yes. Well, I think you're doing a wonderful job, and from what the reputation that I heard of yours before I ever met you, it was absolutely incredible. So,
Well, thank you.
it in case you don't know it, but it's a you're a chief that gets things done the right way.
Oh, I'll try to keep doing that.
So,
Keep listening to my books.
hey, if I always like to toss to my guest, if you would, with all the not just firefighters, but all the public safety out there serving in their communities, it's always a, very, very risky, can be, right? And they do such a wonderful job. If you'd like to close this podcast out with a little blessing to all of those folks.
Yeah, just Heavenly Father, we just thank you for all you do for us. And man, just put your healing hands and your protective hands around all our fire service and EMS folks and our brothers and sisters in blue and all our military folks serving both home and abroad. We just keeping our country safe and our community safe is so important, and you're such a big part of that. And we just thank you so much for everything you provide for us every day. And we know there's challenges, but you always are there, and everything's in your timing and in your hands. And we just thank you so much. And we pray all this in your name. Amen.
Amen. Thank you, Chief.
You bet. Thank you for the time.